This is Nightmare in Wisconsin.
The trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Accusations of first-degree intentional homicide, strangulation, mutilation, dismemberment, and necrophilia.
We bring you raw, unfiltered courtroom audio from the trial of Taylor Shabusiness. Nightmare in Wisconsin.
The judicial assistant should have given each of you a copy of the revised instructions, and I want to go through those again. First of all, I would propose giving 100 opening instructions. I'll note that I, on the next page, I've inserted 602. I indicated that that's where I thought it was most appropriate to insert 602, so I'll give 100 followed by 602. Then I'll give 103, evidence defined. 115, one defendant, three counts. Changes that have been outlined in there, we've talked about. It'll say the counts will be listed as Tuesday, February 22nd, and I've revised the initials used for Mr. Therian. It will say Shad Therian. I've made the agreed-upon elections on the 1193, mutilating a corpse, and then, of course, we move into 1218A, and I have inserted the language that was requested by the state. Mr. Fralick, I believe, objected to that. I ruled, however, that I was going to give it, and that sentence is, of course, under the subheading meaning of did not consent. It's the very last sentence, and I added that in. Then I'll give the modified 755A that was agreed upon and designed by Mr. Saunders. I will give 140, burden of proof and presumption of innocence. 145, information, not evidence. 147, improper questions. 148, objections of counsel, evidence received over objection. 150, stricken testimony. 155, exhibits. 157, remarks of counsel. 160, closing arguments of counsel. I'll give 170, circumstantial evidence. I'll give 172, circumstantial evidence, flight, escape, concealment. I will give 180, statements of defendant. 190, weight of evidence. 195, jurors' knowledge. 200, expert testimony, general. I'll give 255, state need not prove exact date of commission. I'll give 300, credibility of witnesses. I'll give 460, closing instruction. 484, verdict submitted for one defendant, three counts, separate verdict on each count. I'll give 515, unanimous verdict and selection of presiding juror. We'll then select the alternates. A couple of things I want to take up. First of all, I did want to, because we didn't bring this up at our instruction conference, but it's not too big of a problem. I asked my clerk if she could hand one of those to each of the attorneys. This is what Mr. Fralick and I had spoken about earlier, 315. And Mr. Fralick, I know you didn't have a copy of that, but you can have a brief moment to review that with your client and take a few minutes to talk with her about whether or not you and she would like me to give that.
Okay, Your Honor. Thank you. Your Honor, I have reviewed instruction 315. I'm fine with that. And I showed it to my client.
Okay, and I appreciate that, Mr. Fralick. I think I need more than just I'm fine with that. This has got to be something that you either ask me to give or ask me not to give. And I'm going to have a colloquy with your client about it. Do you need some time to speak with her about it? Because if you do, I can leave the bench and come back in a few minutes.
Yeah, maybe that would be a good idea, Your Honor.
All right. We'll take about 5 minutes and have a conversation with her, Mr. Fair.
Thank you.
Okay, so Mr. Fairley, I want to direct my attention to you. Have you had an opportunity to speak with your client about 315?
Yes. So I just want to put this on the record. I talked to my client. We've talked a number of times throughout the duration of my representation. I've advised her that if the case went to a jury trial, she has a right to testify. She has a right to take the witness stand. She has a right to testify in her own defense. But anything that is said could possibly be used against her. So she understands that she has a constitutional right to testify. I also told her that she has an absolute constitutional right not to testify. She has a right to remain silent. She can invoke her Fifth Amendment privileges against self-incrimination. And we've talked about this at length on numerous occasions, several times today. We've reviewed this jury instruction 315, and she's indicated to me that she wishes to exercise her right to remain silent. Before, when you asked the question, I wasn't quite sure what you were asking, so, but I agree to the court reading instruction 315 to the jury. Thank you.
So you're asking that I read this instruction to the jury?
Yes.
Okay. Ms. Shabusiness, you have a right to have this instruction read, or you have a right not to have the instruction read. And that right belongs to you and to you alone. Do you understand that?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Your attorney indicates to me that he would like me to have this instruction read to the jury. Is that correct?
Yes.
And you agree with that?
Yes.
You feel you need any more time to talk to him about that decision?
No.
Okay. Satisfied. Well, first of all, Mr. Saunders, any further inquiry you'd like me to make regarding 315?
No.
Mr. Fralick?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
I'm satisfied that Ms. Shabusiness has indicated that she would like me to read 315 to the jury, and as a result of that, I'm going to do that. The only other topic I want to take up with the attorneys, and then, of course, I'll ask generally whether you have anything you want to raise with me. Now, oftentimes I get a request, I usually read these in order, oftentimes I get a request to have 160 closing arguments read just before you give the closing arguments, which would mean it's right after 315. Before closings, and then obviously after closings I read 460. Any objection to my reading 160 just before closings, Mr. Saunders?
No.
Mr. Fralick?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, I'm going to have 160 then. I'll slide that in just before 315. Strike that, just after 315. Okay. Mr. Saunders, are there any other topics or issues regarding the instructions that you'd like to bring up with me?
No.
You're satisfied with the instructions and the order in which I propose to give them?
Yes.
Mr. Fralick, any topics you'd like to raise regarding the instructions?
No, I would not, Your Honor. I'm in agreement with the form of the instructions.
And the order with which I propose to give them?
Yes, I am.
Very good. Before I ask you about durations of closings, I guess what I would just indicate is I intend to bring the jury out. I intend to instruct them right up through the closing instruction. Attorneys can close. There will be potentially some rebuttal closing. And then we'll select the alternate, and the deliberations will be underway. Anything to bring up before we do that, Mr. Saunders?
No.
Mr. Fralick?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. Then with that, we'll bring the jury in. Thank you. Okay, be seated. Members of the jury, the court will now instruct you upon the principles of law which you are to follow in considering the evidence and in reaching your verdict. It is your duty to follow all of these instructions. Regardless of any opinion you may have about what the law is or ought to be, you must base your verdict on the law I give you in these instructions. Apply that law to the facts in the case which have been properly proven by the evidence. Consider only the evidence received during this trial and the law as given to you by these instructions, and from these alone, guided by your soundest reason and best judgment, reach your verdict. If any member of the jury has an impression of my opinion as to whether the defendant is guilty or not guilty, disregard that impression entirely and decide the issues of fact solely as you view the evidence. You, the jury, are the sole judges of the facts, and the court is the judge of the law only. In this first phase of the trial, you have heard evidence that dealt solely with the defendant's conduct during the alleged incident. You are to determine only whether the defendant is guilty of the charges of first-degree intentional homicide, mutilating a corpse, and third-degree sexual assault. If you find the defendant not guilty, the trial will be over. If you find the defendant guilty, the trial will proceed to the second phase, where you will determine whether the defendant was not responsible by reason of mental disease or defect. Evidence is, first, the sworn testimony of witnesses, both on direct and cross-examination, regardless of who called the witness. Second, the exhibits the court has received, whether or not an exhibit goes to the jury room. Third, any facts to which the lawyers have agreed or stipulated, or which the court has directed you to find. Anything you may have seen or heard outside the courtroom is not evidence. You are to decide the case solely on the evidence offered and received at trial. The first count of the information in this case charges that, count one, the above-named defendant on or about Tuesday, February 22, 2022, in the city of Green Bay, Brown County, Wisconsin, did cause the death of Shad Therian with the intent to kill that person, contrary to sections 940.01 sub 1 sub A, 939.62 sub 1 sub C Wisconsin statutes. To this charge, the defendant has entered a plea of not guilty, which means the state must prove every element of the offense charged beyond a reasonable doubt. First-degree intentional homicide, as defined in section 940.01 of the Criminal Code of Wisconsin, is committed by one who causes the death of another human being with the intent to kill that person or another. Before you may find the defendant guilty of first-degree intentional homicide, the state must prove by evidence which satisfies you beyond a reasonable doubt that the following two elements were present. First, the defendant caused the death of Shad Therian. Cause means that the defendant's act was a substantial factor in producing the death. Second, that the defendant acted with the intent to kill Shad Therian. Intent to kill means that the defendant had the mental purpose to take the life of another human being or was aware that her conduct was practically certain to cause the death of another human being. While the law requires that the defendant acted with the intent to kill, it does not require that the intent exist for any particular length of time before the act is committed. The act need not be brooded over, considered, or reflected upon for a week, a day, an hour, or even for a minute. There need not be any appreciable time between the formation of the intent and the act. The intent to kill may be formed at any time before the act, including the instant before the act, and must continue to exist at the time of the act. You cannot look into a person's mind to find intent. Intent to kill must be found, if found at all, from the defendant's acts, words, and statements, if any, and from the facts and circumstances in this case bearing upon intent. Intent should not be confused with motive. While proof of intent is necessary to a conviction, proof of motive is not. Motive refers to a person's reason for doing something. While motive may be shown as a circumstance to aid in establishing the guilt of a defendant, the state is not required to prove motive on the part of a defendant in order to convict. Evidence of motive does not by itself establish guilt. You should give it the weight you believe it deserves under all the circumstances. If you are satisfied beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant caused the death of Shad Therian with the intent to kill, you should find the defendant guilty of first-degree intentional homicide. If you are not so satisfied, you must find the defendant not guilty. The second count of the information charges that count two, the above-named defendant, on or about Tuesday, February 22, 2022, in the city of Green Bay, Brown County, Wisconsin, did dismember a corpse with the intent to conceal a crime, contrary to section 940.11 sub 1 and 939.62 sub 1 sub C of the Wisconsin statutes. To this charge, the defendant has also entered a plea of not guilty, which means the state must prove every element of the offense charged beyond a reasonable doubt. Section 940.11 sub 1 of the Criminal Code of Wisconsin is violated by one who mutilates, disfigures, or dismembers a corpse with the intent to conceal a crime or avoid apprehension, prosecution, or conviction for a crime. Before you may find the defendant guilty of this offense, the state must prove by evidence which satisfies you beyond a reasonable doubt that the following two elements were present. First, that the defendant dismembered a corpse. Second, that the defendant dismembered a corpse with the intent to conceal a crime. This requires that the defendant acted with the purpose to conceal a crime. You cannot look into a person's mind to find out intent. Intent must be found, if found at all, from the defendant's acts, words, and statements, if any, and from all the facts and circumstances in this case bearing upon intent. If you are satisfied beyond a reasonable doubt that both elements of this offense have been proved, you should find the defendant guilty. If you are not so satisfied, you must find the defendant not guilty. The third count of the information charges that, count three, the above-named defendant on or about Tuesday, February 22, 2022, in the city of Green Bay, Brown County, Wisconsin, did have sexual intercourse with Shad Therian without that person's consent, contrary to sections 940.225 sub 3 sub A and 939.62 sub 1 sub B of the Wisconsin statutes. To this charge, the defendant has also entered a plea of not guilty, which means the state must prove every element of the offense be charged beyond a reasonable doubt. Third-degree sexual assault, as defined in section 940.225 sub 3 sub A of the Criminal Code of Wisconsin, is committed by one who has sexual intercourse with another person without consent. Before you may find the defendant guilty of this offense, the state must prove by evidence which satisfies you beyond a reasonable doubt that the following two elements were present. First, that the defendant had sexual intercourse with Shad Therian. Second, that Shad Therian did not consent to the sexual intercourse. Sexual intercourse means any intrusion, however slight, of any part of a person's body or of any object into the genitalia or anal opening of another. Emission of semen is not required. Did not consent means that Shad Therian did not freely agree to have sexual intercourse with the defendant. In deciding whether Shad Therian did not consent, you should consider what the defendant said and did, along with all the other facts and circumstances. This element does not require that Shad Therian offered physical resistance. It is immaterial whether Shad Therian is dead or alive at the time of the sexual intercourse. If you are satisfied beyond a reasonable doubt that both elements of third-degree sexual assault have been proved, you should find the defendant guilty. If you are not so satisfied, you must find the defendant not guilty. An intoxicated or drugged condition is a defense to criminal liability only if it is involuntarily produced. In reaching your verdict, examine the evidence with care and caution. Act with judgment, reason, and prudence. Defendants are not required to prove their innocence. The law presumes every person charged with the commission of an offense to be innocent. This presumption requires a finding of not guilty, unless in your deliberations you find it is overcome by evidence which satisfies you beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant is guilty. The burden of establishing every fact necessary to constitute guilt is upon the state. Before you can return a verdict of guilty, the evidence must satisfy you beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant is guilty. If you can reconcile the evidence upon any reasonable hypothesis consistent with the defendant's innocence, you should do so and return a verdict of not guilty. The term reasonable doubt means a doubt based upon reason and common sense. It is a doubt for which a reason can be given, arising from a fair and rational consideration of the evidence or lack of evidence. It means such a doubt as would cause a person of ordinary prudence to pause or hesitate when called upon to act in the most important affairs of life. A reasonable doubt is not a doubt which is based on mere guesswork or speculation. A doubt which arises merely from sympathy or from fear to return a verdict of guilt is not a reasonable doubt. A reasonable doubt is not a doubt such as may be used to escape the responsibility of a decision. While it is your duty to give the defendant the benefit of every reasonable doubt, you are not to search for doubt, you are to search for the truth. An information is nothing more than a written formal accusation against the defendant charging the commission of one or more criminal acts. You are not to consider it as evidence against the defendant in any way. It does not raise any inference of guilt. Disregard entirely any question that the court did not allow to be answered. Do not guess at what the witness's answer might have been. If the question itself suggested that certain information might be true, ignore the suggestion and do not consider it as evidence. Attorneys for each side have the right and the duty to object to what they consider are improper questions asked of witnesses and to the admission of other evidence which they believe is not properly admissible. You should not draw any conclusions from the fact that an objection was made. By allowing the testimony or other evidence to be received over the objection of counsel, the court is not indicating any opinion about the evidence. You jurors are the judges of the credibility of the witnesses and the weight of the evidence. During the trial, the court has ordered certain testimony to be stricken. Disregard all stricken testimony. An exhibit becomes evidence only when received by the court. An exhibit marked for identification and not received is not evidence. An exhibit received is evidence whether or not it goes to the jury room. Remarks of the attorneys are not evidence. If the remark suggested certain facts not in evidence, disregard the suggestion. It is not necessary that every fact be proved directly by a witness or an exhibit. A fact may be proved indirectly by circumstantial evidence. Circumstantial evidence is evidence from which a jury may logically find other facts according to common knowledge and experience. Circumstantial evidence is not necessarily better or worse than direct evidence. Either type of evidence can prove a fact. Whether evidence is direct or circumstantial, it must satisfy you beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant committed the offense before you may find the defendant guilty. Evidence has been presented relating to the defendant's conduct after the alleged crime was committed. Whether the evidence shows a consciousness of guilt and whether consciousness of guilt shows actual guilt are matters exclusively for you to decide. The state has introduced evidence of statements which it claims were made by the defendant. It is for you to determine how much weight, if any, to give to each statement. In evaluating each statement, you must determine three things. Whether the statement was actually made by the defendant. Only so much of a statement as was actually made by a person may be considered as evidence. Whether the statement was actually restated here at trial. Whether the statement or any part of it ought to be believed. You should consider the facts and circumstances surrounding the making of each statement, along with all of the other evidence, in determining how much weight, if any, the statement deserves. The weight of evidence does not depend on the number of witnesses on each side. You may find that the testimony of one witness is entitled to greater weight than the testimony of another witness, or even of several other witnesses. In weighing the evidence, you may take into account matters of your common knowledge and your observations and experiences in the affairs of life. Ordinarily, a witness may testify only about facts. However, a witness with specialized knowledge in a particular field may give an opinion in that field. In determining the weight to give this opinion, you should consider the qualifications and credibility of the witness, the facts upon which the opinion is based, and the reasons given for the opinion. Opinion evidence was received to help you reach a conclusion. However, you are not bound by any witness's opinion. If you find that the offense charge was committed by the defendant, it is not necessary for the state to prove that the offense was committed on the precise date alleged in the information. If the evidence shows beyond a reasonable doubt that the offense was committed on a date near the alleged date, that is sufficient. It is the duty of the jury to scrutinize and to weigh the testimony of each witness and to determine the effect of the evidence as a whole. You are the sole judges of the credibility, that is, the believability of the witnesses and the weight to be given to their testimony. In your determination of credibility, you must avoid bias, conscious or unconscious, based upon the witness's race, national origin, religion, age, ability, gender identity, sexual orientation, education, income level, or any other personal characteristic. In determining the credibility of each witness and the weight you give to the testimony of each witness, consider these factors: whether the witness has an interest or lack of interest in the result of this trial, the witness's conduct, appearance, and demeanor on the witness stand, the clearness or lack of clearness of the witness's recollections, the opportunity the witness had for observing and for knowing the matters the witness testified about, the reasonableness of the witness's testimony, the apparent intelligence of the witness, bias or prejudice, if any has been shown, possible motives for falsifying testimony, and all other facts and circumstances during the trial which tend either to support or discredit the testimony. Then, give to the testimony of each witness the weight you believe it should receive. There is no magic way for you to evaluate the testimony. Instead, you should use your common sense and experience. In everyday life, you determine for yourselves the reliability of things people say to you. You should do the same thing here. A defendant in a criminal case has the absolute constitutional right not to testify. The defendant's decision not to testify must not be considered by you in any way and must not influence your verdict in any manner. Consider carefully the closing arguments of the attorneys, but their arguments and conclusions and opinions are not evidence. Draw your own conclusions from the evidence and decide upon your verdict according to the evidence and under the instructions given to you by the court. We're now ready for the attorneys to give their closing arguments. I want to speak briefly, however, to both the attorneys that are giving the closing arguments, if you could approach.
You're listening to True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast, continuous coverage of the trial of Taylor Shabusiness, Nightmare in Wisconsin.
Press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage.
More raw trial audio next.